John Hanson. This is Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. I'm making Patrick Dolan work for it today. Hey, Patrick, how are you doing?
Wait, oh, my mic on?
I tried to turn you on. Here you go. Go ahead. Okay. Now talk.
How's that?
That's better. I think I'm normally a helpful person. You couldn't get headphones to work. I made Iridian in here to help you out. But I've been,
I'm here now. It's all good.
I'm already 3.5 hours into the day. So
we'll see what happens later. You'll probably be over there with a pillow and a blanket on the couch. And I'll just be here.
If you're just joining us, I was in for Hochberg earlier today. Patrick Dolan, who are you? What do you do?
I'm an employment lawyer. Do a lot of workplace stuff. Hiring, termination, non-compete, compensation issues, workplace harassment, retaliation, anything to do with your workplace, except I don't do a lot of workers' comp stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's actually our first question.
Good.
On the text line. But this
I'll sit here silenced.
Yeah. This is an interesting one. But anyway, 312-981-7200. Any questions, whether it's a new contract you want to sign, your former boss is upset you moved and you tried to bring some of your coworkers to your new job. Can you do that? Should you not do that? Do you feel like you're being discriminated at work because of race, creed, age? That's a big one.
Sure.
Did everyone else get a raise and you didn't? And they do the same job you did? Have you been there? I'm just trying to go through questions here. I know that helped people out. Have you worked there for a long time and then you got a 2% raise, but everyone else got 7%? All the young people got 7% raises.
And you know what I get a lot, John, is issues with the boss and whether they're, frankly, legal or illegal, what the boss is doing. And so I have to
talk. Being a toxic boss or more than
exactly.
That?
Exactly. Oh. No, harassing verbally, stuff like that, being kept out of meetings, not given a promotion. And so I talk a lot about, is he just a jerk? I'd use a different word, but I can't.
Mm-hmm.
Is it actually illegal? And so I have to, draw the line for people to understand. And a lot of times it's frankly not illegal. It's just something that you have to work through at your job.
They're just a jerk.
Yeah. Man. And they make your life miserable, but they make other people's lives miserable.
There's
too.
Also good or bad ways to work through those things, and you can
absolutely
help people
out
with
that as
well.
Yes, and that's what I do, right.
312-981-7200 is our phone number. We're getting some texts on the line here, too. I'm trying to think, remember, was it a couple weeks ago we had people calling? Was it their first job they ever had?
No, I think it was their favorite job.
Oh, first job horror stories.
Well, first job horror. Is that Iridian who's answered that?
Okay. Yeah, that's what we did. Iridian. She would remember. Yeah. I was about to say we should make the question, tell me about your worst boss, but that's not a good idea.
No, not a good idea.
Tell me about
that's kind of a downer, boss.
I don't know.
A downer on such a beautiful day, too.
Tell me about your best boss or the thing that your boss has done. Maybe it's little things that really made it fun to go to work. Things that your boss does that are great.
And you know what? I don't hear that very often.
Right.
I'm always on the negative side. I love to hear, hey, this is unexpected, and I loved that my boss did this or the company did this for me.
Let's do that. While we get those calls in, and Iridian's helping out with one caller right now, a text question. After working for a major company for 10 years, then I taught school for 10 years and lost that job because of reduction of staff. I returned to that first company now for 11 years. So if I'm getting this correct, 10 years at company A, taught for 10 years at school B, now back to the first company for 11 years. So I think 21 years now at this first company with us. Are you getting it, Patrick?
No, I thought it was two different companies.
No, I returned to the first company now for 11 years.
Oh, okay.
Last week I was told I no longer have my job. They told me that it was because of reduction in force after a merger. They're now offering me severance pay of about 6 weeks, which doesn't help much because I'm dealing with health issues.
Yeah.
Can I negotiate the severance pay or do I only have the option of accepting their offer? Ed? That is a great question.
Yeah, it's a great question. I will say I probably get that question the most. And everyone's got a different circumstance, but we talk through it. And so it depends. Did he say 6 weeks, John? Is that what he said?
I think so.
Yeah.
Is Ed the one who's calling on the line who texted? Let me find out. Ed, is that your text question and you just called in right now?
No, it isn't.
All right, well, then, Ed, too, hang on the line. I thought, what are the odds of two Eds calling?
Okay, well, we have two Eds. So, separation pay. Short answer is he may be entitled to it, okay? We have to look at, what if he had an agreement for a certain amount.
When he came back.
Yep. Yes. If there's a policy or practice of paying a certain amount of severance,
Like written into an employee handbook or something.
Or literally a policy will say, this was your job at this level of job. We give 2 weeks for every year of service, something mm-hmm. like that. And people think that's actually a rule. It's not a rule. It's just so common that people think I should get 2 weeks. No, not necessarily. The thing that I think I focus on the most, because usually it's a no to those questions, mm-hmm. is, okay, let's look at how, if at all, you were treated differently. Okay. If it's a reduction in force, so you have a bunch of people, it's more difficult, but were you the only one in your job category or your department or something like that?
So you're trying to look at why they were let go.
Yes. Is it, and you got to compare them to other similarly situated people who weren't let go. Are they younger? Is he, you know, over 40 and the people who are kept under 40? Is it a male female mm-hmm. thing? Is it just, there's so many protected categories, particularly under Illinois law, more so than federal law.
So you'd want to talk to Ed just to even get the circumstances.
Oh, there's a
how
lot
did you get
of
let
questions.
Go? Why did you get let
yes,
go?
Yes, yes.
It's about the severance. What if they are giving other people different severances that are laid off, or in the past have given way more and now they're not giving it to Ed?
Yeah. And so that could be a contract claim. If they gave everybody over years X amount and you're getting Y, which is a lot less, I'd say, you know what? He or she's entitled to X, not Y. And so, you know, and companies do that because they like discretion to avoid the earlier point, which is we give everybody this amount, so we yeah. have to give your guy this amount. Well, discretion is sort of good and bad, right? Why is my client getting less? Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that.
Man, 21 years at a company. I know you took a 10-year sojourn to teach school, but 21 years, 6 weeks?
No, that's really low. You know what?
Go ahead.
I'm not saying it's necessarily wrong or illegal
right.
or a breach of contract, but it could be. Okay. There's a lot of questions to ask.
Interesting question, though, about can I negotiate the severance pay? Is there any harm in asking?
No, and sometimes I focus on what's the most effective. This person has been there for however long. They have the relationship with people. If the company really likes my client, I say, you know what? Before I get involved, let's talk about whether I can help you craft an email or tell you what to say.
Something, yeah.
Yeah, something. So there's not, you know, a lawyer jumping in. But at the same time, most people will say, you know what? They're not going to do anything for me. And so I really need you to step forward and be more explicitly involved. That's usually what happens.
Where can people reach you at?
312-332-7800.
312-332-7800.
Right.
Ed number one.
Okay.
Call Patrick Dolan.
Yeah.
Ed number two, I'll get to you after the break on WGN. We asked, you answered. Lots of great questions coming in today, Patrick Dolan. You ready to answer some?
Absolutely.
Patrick Dolan's an employment lawyer. He can help you with a lot of employment issues. And Ed number one called and or texted in. We answered Ed's question. Ed number two, thanks for holding, my friend. How are you?
I'm okay. Thank you.
Tell us what's going on.
I have a question. About 2 years ago, I had a stroke, and my employer at the time offered me family and medical leave.
Mm-hmm.
So I was on short-term disability for 3 months.
Okay.
And they paid me my base salary during those 3 months, but when those 3 months were up, they let me go.
Okay. Did they give you a reason?
They didn't think I could do the job.
Patrick, your thoughts on FMLA, returning, et cetera.
Yeah, it's also, did you apply for a long-term disability, or just you did not qualify?
I went to the Social Security office, and ironically, I was turning 65 at the time. So it was about the same just to be on
the regular stuff.
Right.
Okay.
So let's go back to your termination. So your FMLA time expired. You said 3 months. Your short-term disability, right. Did it expire, or did you no longer qualify for short-term disability?
No, it expired.
Okay. Some policies are like 6 months. Yours apparently was 3 months, right? So you were you were paid during that time. Did you actually return to work, or did you never actually return and they terminated you before you returned?
I never officially returned, but I had been working from home during that time anyway.
Hmm.
Okay, so when they terminated you, did they tell you they thought you could not perform the functions of your job?
they wanted me to get something in writing from my doctor, neurologist.
Okay. And
he did put something in writing and said that I was capable.
Capable of performing the important functions of your job? That's what your neurologist said? Okay. Did you present that to the company?
I did.
What did they say?
They didn't necessarily agree.
With the neurologist?
Did they have you see their own doctor if they didn't agree? And then they fired you.
I just want to explain what's happening here in studio to the listeners. Patrick Dolan is into total lawyer mode right now. I never want to see you across on the witness stand because you're doing a great job questioning Ed, and you're in the zone, Patrick. Ed, here comes Patrick's answer. What do you think, Patrick?
I think that you could, and that was a couple years ago, it could be FMLA retaliation, because if you have a doctor's note that says you can do your job, and what I was about to say is, before you went out on leave, right, you are perfectly fine. You could do your job. There was no criticism of your performance, nothing like that, right? It was the stroke that caused these issues for you?
Right.
Okay. So then you could have an FMLA retaliation claim, because if you have a physician's note that says Ed is capable of doing this job and they say no, but they don't tell you to see their doctor or give any legitimate reason why they think your neurologist is wrong, then I think you have a retaliation claim. And I think when you say 2 years ago, like literally when?
It'll be 2 years this August.
Okay. I would like you to call my office, Ed, so I can follow up with you. If you want to do that.
What do you think, Ed?
Okay.
I mean, why not, right? Talk to Patrick. And I think the reason he's asking is because there's probably the time is of the essence.
It is.
You're approaching 2 years. Yeah.
So just to be clear, he's still within the statute of limitations for the FMLA, the Family and Medical Leave Act retaliation claim. He's not under the Americans with Disabilities Act, the ADA, which is something I also thought he might be protected by. And because they didn't even have a reasonable accommodation discussion. But you have to file within 300 days of the event. And that is a hard and fast rule. You can't do anything with that.
But the FMLA retaliation could potentially still be a thing.
Yes, exactly.
Ed, do you have Patrick's number? Do you want me to give it to you again?
Please.
You got a pen ready?
Sure.
Okay. 312-332-7800. Say it back to
me. They also never mentioned to me that I could apply for unemployment.
So you did not apply?
I did not.
Okay, we can talk about that too.
All right, Ed. Hey, I'm sorry. It seems like you're doing better now, though.
Are you working?
No.
Okay.
Okay. Are you doing better? Are you feeling okay, Ed?
I am. Thank God, I'm feeling better. I still have significant balance issues, and I've had a couple of bad falls.
Oh, I'm sorry, Ed.
Recently.
Hang in there.
I broke my arm.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that, Ed. Hang in there, okay, bud?
Thank you.
All right. Good. That's an important one.
Yeah, and that's a pretty common question, actually. People get back from FMLA leave, and they're fired.
That's not cool.
No, usually not.
And maybe not legal. Can you put Ed on hold there, Iridian? Oh, no, she's talking to him, so I can go to Steven. I never know which buttons to press.
Eight years
doing this. Yeah, well, my God.
I can't help you.
Hey, Steven, what's your question?
Hey. Well, I'd like to know... I was denied a union pension because the union that I was in and that I retired from a job that was represented by this union, they said that I am a 1B employee and the pensions are only good for 1A employees. And I was not told that, and I worked for this government agency for 28 years.
Jeez.
I was going to get a small pension.
Oh, my God.
$158 is not a lot, but, you know, it's $158.
It's something. So,
absolutely.
And it's also more like you feel like you're entitled to it.
Yeah, it's dignity. Right. You worked thinking you were going to have it, okay?
So did they show you something that said, given this position, you're in this category and you're not entitled to a pension?
Yes, after I applied.
Okay.
I disagree.
When did you apply for it?
About 5 years ago.
Now, hold on. I want to ask one thing. Stephen, you said you disagree. Are you saying that you think they're miscategorizing your job?
They're putting me in a classification of an employee that is not eligible for a pension. Can I say the union name?
No, don't say the union name. Off air.
But are you saying that they were wrong in classifying you as that? Or you just didn't know?
Yes, I am. I was not aware that I was a 1B employee for all these years.
Okay, so you're not disagreeing necessarily that you're 1B. You just didn't know.
Yeah.
That 1B meant no pension.
Right. I'm not a lineman, and I don't work for a telephone company, and I don't work for a public utilities company. I worked for a local county health department.
Okay.
And we were in the union, and I've been paying my dues all those years, thinking, well, I'll get a little pension. And when I applied, they said, nope, Steve, you're not eligible. Well, isn't that discrimination? Mm. Aren't they discriminating? I mean, aren't all union brothers union brothers?
I was thinking more along the contract lines or misrepresentation lines. But I'm happy to have a conversation with you to walk through, because there's a bunch of different angles here. Could be contract, could be misrepresentation. And I'd like to dig into your job, why you're categorized as that, et cetera. Yeah, yeah. So... I'm very concerned about that.
And it's a free call. He can call you, right?
Of course.
Yeah. Stephen,
just call. Okay. Just call and chat. Yeah. Let's do it.
All right. Perfect. And then I'll grab a pen, and the next time you guys do a telephone number to contact you,
great.
I'll jot it down.
I'll say it now here, too, but you'll hear it in the next hour because Patrick's not going anywhere. 312-332-7800. A lot of great questions coming in on the text lines. The phone lines are now open. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. And as always, Patrick, you've struck a nerve with people. And I just want to point out, in all these situations, you can hear how emotional this is.
I know it is.
Someone works for 28 years. There should be, and maybe there was some paperwork at the beginning that was missed or something, but oh my God, you better know.
You know what, John? I am so cognizant of that, because people, understandably so and rightly so, who I talk to every single day are upset, distraught, concerned, confused, and you really have to, and I do, you have to sympathize with them because they're in a tough spot. It's their job, and jobs are so important to most of us. They just want help.
They want to get what they feel like they deserve.
Absolutely. They just don't want to be treated, wrongly.
I get that.
You're listening to Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association, with host John Hansen. Today's show is sponsored by attorney Patrick Dolan from Conti and Dolan. Now, here's John Hansen. And let's get legal.
All right, hour two of Let's Get Legal. My fifth hour in a row.
After good. You look good.
This is when things get weird.
Okay, good. I'm glad I'm here for that then.
Every now and then when I fill in for Lisa Dent, then roll into Your Money Matters, hour five gets a little crazy.
If I look over and I don't see anything, I'll just keep talking.
Just please.
Yeah, Iridian's going to have to really help me though.
Yes, that's like when I had COVID brain fog a couple weeks ago and I had to have you carry the show.
It was good.
You did great.
Oh, thanks.
One of our best shows. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. Patrick Dolan of Conti and Dolan. Although, you know what I think about it?
What?
On the weekends, it should be Dolan and Conti.
No, don't say that.
Because you're
Saturday. I really
Saturday,
don't want to get in trouble.
And she's Sunday.
Okay, well, we could say it a different way. But
right.
You know what I mean?
No, yeah, you don't want to get in trouble.
No, I don't.
Conti comes first.
Her office is right next to mine. I don't want to get in trouble.
Conti comes first, alphabetically and in all things.
Yes, exactly. Just leave it at that.
Karen Conti is so nice and such a good person.
Yeah,
but
she is.
I can totally see her, like I've seen you sometimes, a person go into lawyer mode. I wouldn't want to be on the other side of Karen Conti.
It's fun when we start talking about legal issues and different cases and stuff, when we both get into it.
Oh my gosh, man.
We just feed off each other.
You nerd off each other.
We do.
That's good stuff.
We do. She's great.
Jennifer has an employment question. She texted it in. It's a really good one. And I said, well, Patrick wants a few more details if you can call in. Hi, Jennifer. How are you doing today?
I'm doing okay. How about you guys?
Good. This one is one that Patrick has wanted to talk about for a while, about classification of work. So why don't you give the listeners the story of what your gig is and what you're curious about?
So work at a haunted house. So it's definitely a seasonal employment. Our owners have changed us to independent contractors.
Mm-hmm. Did you used to be W-2?
Years ago.
Okay.
So this isn't a recent change. This has been a long time coming. or a long time. But we sign contracts at the beginning of the year that outline what our job duties are, outline our daily pay, what any bonuses we may receive. There's two levels of pay based off of your performance. And they also supply all of the supplies necessary in order for you to do your job.
So you're wondering is, you know, normally an independent contractor kind of sets the price and are hired to do something for a specific gig.
Right.
And they typically use their own equipment or their own things to complete jobs, mm-hmm. not some laundry list of demands from an employer. So you're wondering is, are you classified incorrectly?
Yes.
Patrick.
Well, it sounds like it. I mean, you know, there's a lot of different parts to that test, but essentially it comes down to control. If they tell you when to show up and what to do and use their equipment and you're under their supervision and it's what the company does, in other words, what your job is for them is what they do, which it sounds like it is, then there's a pretty good argument that you are misclassified.
Okay.
What could happen? What are the ramifications, right? Like
a lot, it's pretty punitive for the employer. I mean, they haven't paid taxes, right? So they haven't paid employment or into the workers' comp fund. Or there's like a lot of things that are pretty egregious when it comes to what happens to the employer for not classifying somebody correctly.
Now, Jennifer, do you like working there or no? Yeah, okay. I'm saying you don't seem like a vindictive person who's trying to shut down all operations and mess this employer up forever.
No.
But so what could you maybe, if Jennifer were to reach out to you, suggest this as opposed to you bringing the legal force of a world on down on them? You could write a letter or call them.
No. I'd want to talk to them and hear why they think it's okay to classify their folks as contractors, because it's going to involve more than just her. It's either a class of individuals who are misclassified, or it's an all or none, John. They're either all classified correctly or they're all misclassified. So it's something that would be super important to the company. I would like to know why they're classified as independent contractors.
Jennifer, I'm curious, because maybe some people who have never been independent contractors, I have, and I kind of get where you're coming from. Why would you prefer to be W-2?
Yes.
Why?
The tax, just because of the tax implications.
Yep. And that is because you have to pay self-employment tax, right?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. You seem quizzical, Patrick.
No, I was just thinking about that. I mean, it might work for her and to her benefit in terms of taxes. I mean, you're going to have to pay taxes on that as a 1099 anyway, and sometimes that becomes more expensive than if you're W-2 taxed. You know what I mean?
Yes. So mm-hmm. Plus, the onus is on you to go through all the work and do it.
Well,
trust
you got to save the money, you know, because you're going to be hit with a big tax bill.
Yeah, you got to spread it out over, you got to pay quarterly, or you got to do every other way. You got to do something.
And there are benefits. I mean, workers' comp. There's certain benefits that employees get that independent contractors don't.
Okay, so. Jennifer, you want to call Patrick?
Yeah, definitely.
All right, good. I like that. 312-332-7800.
That's it.
And Jennifer, give him a call next week, and he will gladly call the haunted house. Are you a fan of haunted houses, Patrick?
No, I'm not.
Oh,
sorry.
By the way, hey, Jennifer, thanks for calling, Jennifer, okay?
Thanks.
Yeah.
I know, it kind of creeped me out. I like horror movies, but I don't like haunted houses.
All I know is when on a employment segment on a law show, when I see the first words, I work at a haunted house, I'm
that's
like,
that's a good start. Let's take that one.
I don't even care what the question is next. I want that
I don't
person.
Get a lot of those, John, just so you know.
Now that Jennifer hung up, I have so many questions about haunted houses, how they all work. I should have thought about that. But hey, it's hour five. My brain is off. That independent contractor W-2 thing is really interesting. And her work is seasonal. It doesn't have to be seasonal. Misclassifications happen all the time. And for those that don't quite get, well, why would a company do that? Well, the company has to pay a payroll tax for W-2 employees.
Right.
So you, the employee, when you get a W-2, you'll see a certain amount of taxes are taken out. Well, guess what? Those are matched on the other side, essentially, by the employer.
Right.
When you're an independent contractor, they don't pay that.
And benefits. Benefits is a huge deal.
Not all W-2 employees get benefits, but they have certain entitlements.
A lot of them do, but contractors don't.
At all.
And so you get no benefits.
And so then people say, well, why would anyone want to be an independent contractor? Well, you set your terms. I work for this much, except not, if not, by, like, you don't get dictated, show up, it's a different kind of
job. No, it's totally different, and a lot of people work for different companies as a consultant or a contractor, right? Mm-hmm. So they can kind of determine what they want to do, when they want to do it, mm-hmm. how they want to do it. You're really a service provider. That's right. That's the way I look at it.
All right, I'm going to line one.
Sure.
Diane doesn't have a question, I don't think. Oh. Diane, you got some thoughts, huh?
Oh, hi. I don't want to go all over the map, you know, because I tend to get rambling with things because
me too.
I was in the service industry and hotels and everything, and how that has changed over the years, you know, the applying and whatever, and what people believe that these are jobs that are not wanted by people, the average person, and yet they're lucrative jobs, they're nice jobs, the hotel jobs, but yet there's turnover.
Oh, yeah.
Years ago, people stayed a long time, bellman, front desk. People worked their way up to housekeeping. But now there's this bottleneck situation where the union, and it seems to have the power to get HR to hire people. But when you have to go through the hoops to go online, and everything became online because Marriott is huge, Hyatt is huge, Hilton is huge. So if you went on that website right now, not only would you see Indeed and all these other places on Google talking about Marriott, Hilton, Hyatt, you would see the website itself, and you go on careers, and there's a bunch of jobs. But, you know, once you go through that and you do the password and you diligently hope you're going to reach a human being, you don't get there. You get the emails, regret to inform you. If you luck out and get an interview, then there's two more interviews. Now, these are people who come out of college with a hospitality degree, which is also something I'd argue is not needed, because years ago you had people who had the right stuff to do the job and they were hired by a human being. But then the other side of the coin is the union pushing for money reasons. For instance, now there's a push to get minimum wage. Mm-hmm. Now, that's outrageous, because every waiter lived on your tips. Back in the day, it was 90 cents an hour. Then it went to one something.
You're
was
talking about
two.
The sub-minimum wage.
So you know what? Now they want, and my belief is service over has, if you want to say devolved, over the time that people that were truly have the right stuff to do the job and don't intend to have a degree or whatever, but, you know, do that job well and stay there. Those people had a certain something that the boss, a human being, saw, mm-hmm. and they were good with people, et cetera, et cetera. But now the people who are in that industry and making very good money, not only are they not satisfied with it, they are not suited for the job. I know I'm sounding very judgmental, but for the most part, I think the people who are hollering the most don't really have the right ingredients to do the job, and they're exhausted, and they consider it very, very hard work. Mm-hmm. Therefore, they think they deserve, and that's outrageous. And you know what? I would campaign for... Back in the day, I was telling various people, I would work for 6 to 2 breakfast, lunch, whatever, if there was just no tipping involved. Just give me the salary, the wage.
Right.
That is decent. Give me an hour lunch and give me a regular job. That's another thing. Tipping then could be eliminated. Okay.
So you got a lot in there, Diane. I appreciate your thoughts, and I know a lot of people share those, okay?
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
You know, like, this show can be therapy, too.
It is. I mean, you know, she expressed her opinion.
Diane's got big thoughts, right?
Yeah,
she does. And I know a lot of people scream about some of these issues as well. She wasn't screaming. I wasn't saying that. But, like, vent about it.
Yep.
And it's a legal show. We're talking about employment.
You know, it's cathartic, and I hope she feels better.
I hope she feels better, too.
Exactly.
And she had some wonderful thoughts. 708 wants to know, can you prove age discrimination? That is a great question. How do you go about doing that, Patrick? Why did you just wink at me?
No, I didn't. I'm sorry. I did not mean to, John.
Why are you glitching? I need you to stand strong.
I'm here.
Okay.
Can you prove it? Sure. And there are a couple different ways. So the line for age discrimination is over 40 years old. So if you're over 40, you have to be over 40 to even have a claim, possible claim. Then you need to either be treated worse than someone who's under 40. Maybe they got the job and you didn't, and it was because of your age. Maybe they, you know, younger folks got a bonus, you didn't, all that kind of stuff. But it's an over under 40 thing. And then there could be comments, ageist comments. You're too old for the job. You know, they make fun of people who are old because, you know, they think too slowly.
You don't know
walk
what AI
slowly.
Is even about,
exactly.
Grandpa. Okay, yeah,
all that kind of stuff. That could be age-based harassment. And if you're fired, or, you know, demoted or literally just kept out of meetings, or your job is somehow negatively impacted because of your age, that's another way to prove it. So there's lots of ways you do it. Now, you have to put sort of the pieces of the puzzle together. You know, it can't be just one or two comments unless they're really egregious,
right,
which they usually aren't. Sexual harassment, it really could be one or two.
Mm-hmm.
Age, not normally, frankly. So you have to put that together with certain actions, how the person over 40 was treated worse. You know, you have to put the puzzle together a little bit versus, you know, someone who's 35 got hired, the person who's 50 didn't. Same experience, same, you know, history, et cetera, et cetera. So sometimes you have to put the pieces together. I will say age is hard to prove. Age mm-hmm. discrimination is hard to prove. It is probably the most common discrimination, though.
Hmm.
And I talk to people about age discrimination many times every single week at my job.
Really?
And trying to define where, if and where they suffered discrimination based on the actions against them.
Okay. That's a good answer to the 708. So basically, can you prove it? Yes.
Yes.
Is it hard?
It is hard.
Okay.
It's challenging because there are a lot of ways to try to cover it up, and some companies are pretty good about trying to do that.
Doesn't mean you shouldn't try.
No, for sure not.
We put out at the top of the show when you came on at 1:30. We'll take a fun question like, "Who's your best boss, or what did your boss do that's great?" Like you said, not a lot of people. It's not lighting up the phone lines.
No, but maybe it was a bad question.
No, it's not a bad question. We had a great text from the 630. Mary chimed in. My two best bosses both had military backgrounds. They understood how to lead, how to get employees to follow them. They weren't petty, and they respected the employees. I think that respect word will come up in a lot of answers, right, Patrick?
Well, it does. And I talk to people all the time who do not feel respected at all.
Mm-hmm.
And they're, you know, overtly disrespected, frankly,
right,
in terms of how they're talked to or what they have to do for their job, or, you know, a lot of different reasons. And the question is it illegal, or is it the guy just, or woman, just a jerk?
Yeah.
So
312-981-7200. We used to have a segment on the TV show I was on called Is John a Jerk, where I would just lay out a scenario and people would call in and vote and if I was a jerk or not. I think one of them was like, I mowed the lawn at like 8:30 on a Saturday or something like that.
Yeah,
I later found out I am a jerk, and
yes.
I now agree with that.
Yes, you do.
And I
sure.
won't. 10 a.m. is now my
yeah.
weekend limit.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah, I think
that's respectful.
I tweeted out the other day at like 9:46, is it too early to mow the lawn? And someone said yes. I'm like, okay, I'm at 9:46.
I don't think so.
But I waited 14 more
yeah.
minutes just because of that one texter. Boy, I'm going off the
Wait,
rails
is it like
here.
A personal rule, the 10 a.m. thing?
I think that's just a common courtesy thing.
On the weekend, yeah.
On a weekday, I don't mind doing it at 8:30 because guess what? All the lawn services on my street,
For
I don't
sure.
use one, but anyone that has one.
They start at like,
seven,
like, yeah, I was going to say
yeah.
earlier than that.
So,
I hear them on the weekend too, though.
Yeah, I do too. But I get it. Like, maybe you're out, maybe your routine's a little different. You want the kids, whatever it is. 10 a.m., fine. All right, back to what you're here for.
Right. Well, that was fun.
Employment law and lawn care law should be a show. I'm a federal worker and a veteran, says the 773. Can the federal government force me to retire if I get approved for 100% VA disability?
Well, I'm confused by the force to retire question, because if you're disabled and you qualify for 100% disability, then you can't work. So it's one or the other with disability.
Maybe the texter's wondering, are they going to find out if I get 100% VA disability and I work for the federal government? I mean, I think they would, right?
Yes, that would be a real problem, because then you are defrauding the provider, the disability
yeah,
benefits provider.
Yeah,
so that's not a good idea.
No, I don't think so. If you're going
to 100%. I'm not going to go on, it's going on a limb to say that's not a good idea.
Right. A lot of questions coming in. I mow the lawn at 6 a.m. on a Sunday. 815. Oh, your neighbors. Do you have neighbors, 815? Let's get the neighbors to call and let us know what they think about
that. That's literally what the person said. 6 a.m.
6 a.m. on a Sunday.
No, that's not appropriate at all.
Wow. Strong words from Patrick Dolan.
I'd be out there.
Yeah.
In my jammies.
Yelling at them?
Stop, right.
Boy, I want to see that.
No, you don't.
Okay.
Nobody does.
312-981-7200. The show's going off the rails. We still have another half hour of Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Get your questions in about employment law. We have some more texts to get to. Tell us about the good things that bosses have done. What inspires you from a boss? I want to hear and inspire the bosses who listen to maybe be better at their jobs. And we'd love to hear your employment questions as well. 312-981-7200. Karen Conti tomorrow, her law partner Patrick Dolan today.
And I get to spend a little time with her on our show tomorrow.
Oh, you're going to be on the show tomorrow?
I am.
Yep. What are you talk about?
Whistleblower stuff, I think.
Ooh,
yeah,
interesting.
A lot to talk about there.
We just had a texter wondering how you can report someone for a sham disability on a federal job. And do you have the answer to the now, or do you want to wait till tomorrow?
You know what? I don't want to get in trouble with Karen.
Okay.
So, but you know, there are ways to do it. You have to file a claim with a government agency, and we can talk about that.
Mike Leonard can help you out, too. He represents whistleblowers.
Exactly. He can.
In that exact situation, too, where people are defrauding the government.
Yep.
Because there's this really squirrely thing where, not squirrely, but the government may not prosecute the case themselves. How does it work? I should just have Mike explain it. But basically, if you're the one that does it, you can do it, and you'll end up getting some of the money yourself.
Right.
You get like cut.
Right.
If you save the government $100 million, you get 10 of it or so. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, no, it's seriously like it's like 20% or
something. Something good.
No, it's something pretty high.
Like, which makes sense.
Like surprisingly high. I think it's scaled based on how much your government recovers.
Okay.
Your percentage.
Okay, yeah. So,
but some people have made a lot of money on whistleblower claims, like fraud-based whistleblower claims.
And some people might be like, well, then what, you know, that seems shady. Why are we rewarding a whistleblower? They should just do it for the right reasons. Okay, but guess what? That helps keep everyone honest, or is a way to try and keep government contracts honest?
Yeah, I think it's actually for the right reason. I mean, the fact that they're paid doesn't mean it's the wrong reason, you know, but a lot of good comes of it, right?
Right.
There's so much healthcare fraud, and that's where a lot of the issues are.
Mm-hmm. Okay. 779, Kate from LaSalle.
Kate.
Speaking of the ADA, American mm-hmm. Disabilities sure. Act, how much does a disabled young man have protection when an employer, a retail employer, does not follow accommodations set in place? This woman says she struggled with blank company. I'll tell you off the air, Patrick.
Okay.
For 7 years about her son, who's 37. He has autism psychosis. I'm his mother, caregiver, and blue in the face trying to reach a suitable agreement to give him a stable, supervised environment. It's been a nightmare of verbal abuse and emotional abuse for my son. Can we back up a little bit?
Yes.
Talk about the ADA.
Yes.
And what is happening here?
Okay, so she mentioned that there is an accommodation in place. And let me just talk about something before we get to that issue. Under the Americans with Disabilities Act, if someone qualifies as disabled, they're entitled to engage in a discussion with their employer about what the job, how the job duties can be changed to address their limitations. All right.
Okay.
That's called a reasonable accommodation.
You have to already be employed at that place for this to happen.
When we're talking about a reasonable accommodation part of the ADA, yes, it's for employees. So she said that they are not following an accommodation that apparently they've already agreed to.
They're not following accommodations set in place.
Set in place, right. So there's already been a discussion, but that is not a stagnant thing. That tends to be a fluid thing because people's abilities change when they are disabled. Maybe they're no longer capable of doing something else. Companies don't have to do everything an employee protected by the ADA requests. It's a back and forth. If it's an undue hardship on the company to do it, then they don't have to do it. But there's a lot of give and take there as to what the company can do, what the employee who's protected under federal law needs to do their job. But you have to be able to do your job with that accommodation. And the accommodation has to be something that really doesn't put out the company. But that's a pretty high bar,
yeah,
I'd say.
Because, in other words, hey, company, let's find a middle ground here.
Yes.
Let's try to agree to that. There's a good chance they can still do some part of their job, or they can do it in a different way. And they kind of give leverage to both sides a little bit here.
Right.
And, now what if Kate says, does not follow accommodations set in place. When you said things are fluid,
yeah.
If Kate's son, and I don't know if that's the case here, maybe some things have changed.
Yeah.
could that then give the company a little leeway to say, well, we're not going with the previous agreement. We got to work out something new now.
Yeah, because it could be an, quote, an undue business hardship on them at that point.
Right.
But that's an ongoing thing. That discussion has to happen. It's not like the company can say, I'm not going to talk to you about a reasonable accommodation. No, they have to. That's a violation of law if they don't.
They legally have to say, they well, legally, let's at least talk about it.
They absolutely must. And not only if the employee asks, but if it's apparent to the company that an employee needs an accommodation because they are disabled, the company can say, listen, should say, listen, I can see you're struggling with X. Let's talk about how you can do X, which is an important part of your job.
Mm-hmm.
That will start the discussion. But they can't put their head in the sand and say, you didn't ask for an accommodation, so we didn't know that you needed one. No, that's not how it works.
Let's say, and I don't know what the case is here, this son has been working there for 7 years. He's 37.
It's a long time.
So he's been there since he was 30.
Right.
Okay. Let's assume that maybe the autism and psychosis were there apparent and mm-hmm. disclosed at mm-hmm. the point of hiring.
Okay.
Can accommodation, are accommodations made right then and there?
There should be.
Okay.
Yeah.
By the ADA.
Yes. As part of the hiring process, you, the company, has to have a discussion and say, here are the job duties, applicant. Can you do these duties with or without an accommodation? Sometimes the person's disability is obvious. Sometimes it's not. But the company can't ask a bunch of questions about what the disability is.
In the hiring process.
No, the focus is entirely on, can you do the job? And if the applicant says, yes, I can do the job and I need these accommodations, that's when that discussion, the reasonable accommodation discussion, will start.
Okay, broader question then.
Sure.
This is interesting. Can you discriminate? Can a company discriminate and not hire you because of a disability? Or if you say you can do the job with accommodations, they need to be given equal weight in determination of the job as any other applicant?
Absolutely, 100%. So if you say, yes, I can do this job and I need these accommodations, and the accommodations are reasonable, in other words, it's not a huge hardship on the company, and if they don't get hired, it may be because of that.
Mm-hmm. So, and that's illegal.
That is illegal, 100%.
Okay.
It's also illegal to just not even have that conversation during the hiring process. Because if a company looks at someone or listens to someone or sees someone and says, you know what, it doesn't appear to us that you're going to be able to do this job, right? That's illegal. And so they don't hire them based on what they've looked like. You're not even asking them about whether they can do the job or not, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So you can't, that's illegal to not hire that person because of, you know, maybe it's something you can tell, like maybe they're blind or maybe they're deaf. But, what you know, can they do the job with an accommodation given those things? That's what has to happen.
In reality, do you think mm-hmm. a lot of companies will not hire people that need accommodations because they feel like it's going to be too much?
Absolutely,
and yes. They find another reason to say.
Absolutely, yes.
That's
and
not okay.
I've talked to people all the time who that has happened to. Most people come to me when there's not an accommodation, when they're like, I asked the company to do this, they absolutely won't do it. And then I have to ask, okay, what's your job? What can you do? What's the accommodation? Determine if it's reasonable or not.
Right.
That's normally the what people come to me for. But people are, you know, terminated or not hired in violation of the ADA all the time.
Right. Kate says that she chimed in because we were talking about her case. The accommodation was redone in March of this year.
Okay.
And my son works full time.
So what's the issue now? The accommodation doesn't work now, even though it's been redone?
Maybe. Or yeah, that's what the company says. Or that they're not following this accommodation.
Yeah. This is really kind of down the rabbit hole discussion. You really have to get in the weeds about this person's job and what the company says they cannot do, even with an accommodation, or they can't do the accommodation.
Mm.
Now, I know who the employer is because we talked about
it.
Okay, I'm not going to say anything.
No.
But given what the employee does for this employer and given the nature of the job, and I understand the business, I'd really like to know why they can't do that job.
Kate, call Pat.
Yeah, I'd really like to know.
I'm going to text the number in here. 312-332-7800 is Patrick's number. This is what I'm texting. This is the kind of service you get on this show.
Yeah, individual
texting.
Yeah, right, you're really good. You're typing. You're mm-hmm. typing with two hands, although two fingers.
what did you want to say?
I was going to say, you know, I feel badly for the mom and her son. I mean, this is so stressful and frustrating. You know, it really is.
Mm-hmm.
Disability issues. And I have so many clients with mental health issues who want an accommodation. And it's just really, really hard and frustrating.
Yeah.
It's very hard on the family and the individual.
Kate, you're an awesome mom. That's
yeah, for sure. For 100%. Sure.
Let's take a break. Then we got more. Oh, your questions too. 312-981-7200. Got a few more minutes with Patrick Dolan from Conti and Dolan after this on WGN. Good Saturday afternoon, everyone. It's John Hansen. This is Let's Get Legal. We're powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Patrick Dolan's been gracious enough to give us a ton of time today from Conti and Dolan. And we've got a lot of great questions.
Yeah,
we,
it's
Patrick?
Been fun. And you're hanging in there.
I'm hanging in
there. 5 hours is almost up, John.
I was in for Hochberg today, which was a thrill.
It is a fun show. Yeah.
I was trying to bring some of that into this show a little bit, Patrick.
Sometimes it's a little serious, though, you know. We have to be.
Right. When you spend the first half hour talking about Hunter Biden, it's hard to like have a good old grand old time.
Yeah, that Mike Leonard was really informative.
Yeah, actually, I'm glad you pointed
it
out.
Great.
Go to WGNradio.com. Iridian will post that conversation soon. Whether you politically agree or disagree with the Bidens, with Hunter, with former President Trump, doesn't matter. The legal discussion about what went on with that plea deal earlier this week is bonkers.
No, it is. And I love the way Mike explains things.
Yes.
And as I was on Lakeshore Drive panicking that I wouldn't get here on time, I was listening to Mike and I forgot about the fact that I wouldn't get here on time. But I did.
You did.
I did.
You got it. No, it was really interesting. Democrat, Republicans, Independents, listen to that conversation at WGNradio.com. It made my eyebrows go, huh?
Yeah.
And it might
I learned
for you
a lot.
As well. I did too.
Yeah.
Okay. I wanted to ask you, we had the Diane.
Okay.
Diane's thoughts. Where she kind of went on for like 2 or 3 minutes with her thoughts about all the things. She mentioned Indeed.com and hiring practices.
Yes.
And I had recently become aware that the odds of a human being seeing your resume are so low when you apply through these job portals because they use AI to determine which resumes make the cut. There's a lot of concern about that, isn't
there? Yeah, and they're just looking for words. And the EEOC, which is a federal agency that enforces federal employment laws.
EEOC?
Equal Employment Opportunity Commission.
Thank you.
That's a federal agency that enforces federal employment laws, is really concerned about that exact process and how AI can be used to eliminate candidates based on words or experience or something that has a discriminatory impact on a certain group.
But wait, humans are the ones that discriminate. How would a computer discriminate?
Now, what you get out what you put in.
Okay,
so
explain that.
Yeah, so if you're designing a program in looking for, say, you're hiring for a job, and you're like, I need you, computer, to look for these 10 or 15 words and all of these hundreds of resumes. If the 10 or 15 words is going to bring about folks who are only white or only under 40 or, you know, whatever it may be because of whatever those trigger words are, that's what the EEOC is concerned about. Because it's hard to prove that impact exists. So the focus is the input that goes into that decision making. So the EEOC is putting together, you know, trying to put together all these policies and practices about how that process should look so that it doesn't have that impact when they start spitting out resumes that, you know, disqualify certain persons.
If that was a lot of gobbledygook, I'm going to
sorry.
Try and that was great.
Well,
Patrick, I'm going to try and simplify
it
for people like me who don't get it all. I read an interesting story about all this.
Let's do it.
AI is basically a mirror of ourselves, right? It scrapes the internet for information.
Yep.
So if discrimination strongly exists in certain places, the AI in those certain places will also discriminate. It is not its own mind. It is simply reflecting what already exists in the hiring practices that happen already.
Yeah.
And the inputs can be maybe more overtly discriminatory.
Right.
Because an employer says, I don't want this. And for example, when people are like, what do you mean? What words? Okay. There was an interesting study done about certain jobs and what line on a resume was given more weight by the machines, by AI, to determine whether they'd get the job or not, or advance to the next stage. So, like, what was the one thing that held all these applicants together? And you know what it was?
No.
They played lacrosse in high school, which is... you must be thinking, like, what does that mean?
What's the job? A coach? A lacrosse coach?
No. This is like some
No, I know.
It's exactly, a finance that's the point. Job. And so I don't know if it's because the employer asked, I only want people who play lacrosse, or that, or whether it's the AI determining that on its own, trying to figure out qualified applicants. But the point is that AI is not perfect. AI has a long way to go. It can be a useful tool. And certainly reading through thousands of resumes, hundreds of thousands, is hard to do for employees these days.
No, that's a good example, because the EEOC would be concerned about that.
Yes.
Because lacrosse tends to be a white sport, frankly.
Yes.
And so you're not going to get a lot of minority applicants who played lacrosse.
Right.
You just aren't. And they could be absolutely as qualified as the lacrosse players, but they're not going to make it through to get a human interview.
Right.
And that's remember, exactly the point.
And I laughed at you when I said, oh, it's for a lacrosse job. No, that's a great point. This is not for anything that has anything to do with lacrosse.
Right. I know.
This is for finance, law, something like that.
And there's a lot of, like, think of it. You could enter, I want folks who went to, you know, some private elite college.
Right.
Minority applicants or students are probably less there mm-hmm. than a big public university or whatever it is. So there's a lot of impacts there that the EEOC is really, rightly so, concerned about.
For sure. And they are diving into that, which is going to take some time.
It is.
And we'll have
this
to
is so
see.
New. Yeah.
Yeah. Patrick Dolan, we got about a minute left.
Okay.
Who should be reaching out to you?
Anyone with any kind of workplace issue in the hiring, termination, separation process. I talk a lot with folks about non-competes. Non-competes are still enforceable. There is a movement that someday they may not be, but we have to assume that they are. So I talk with folks a lot about restrictive covenants like non-competes and non-solicits as well.
And non-solicit is?
You cannot solicit a former employee to come work with you in a new job, and you can't solicit a former customer to come work with you at your new job.
Okay, so you dive into those issues.
All the time.
If you get hired and you have a letter and a contract, maybe have you take a look at it over?
Yep, I could help negotiate the contract, or if it's separation agreement, look at what you get. But the offer letter is really important, because the job's going to end, and so whatever's in that offer letter is really important. It's what you get on the way out.
Yeah, you're the only person that wants to talk about what happens on the way out when you're on the way in, but it's important.
Really important.
Yeah, exactly, because, yeah, jobs end
some way. Got to be careful about that, right, but you have to be realistic.
Yeah, for sure. By the way, got one text I want to read. I talked about mowing the lawn not before 10 a.m. on the weekend. Not that I don't want to do it, but I know my neighbors probably wouldn't want to. This, and then we had someone say they mow the lawn at 6 a.m., every Sunday morning, and the 815 says, yeah, I would tell my neighbor, if they were mowing the lawn at 6 a.m., to take up golfing instead, and if they don't listen, just throw 500 or 600 balls in the lawn.
It's a good way to end the show.
Golf balls are expensive, though.
They are.
But I see what you're getting at. Patrick, thanks for your time.
Thanks, John. My pleasure.
Where should people reach you at?
312-332-7800.
And do you have a website as well?
We do. ContiDolanLaw.com.
And you'll be on the show tomorrow.
I will, with Karen.
And you'll talk about?
Whistleblower law. There we go.
If you can't tell what's happening, I've got like 15 more seconds to fill, and Patrick's giving me 1 second answers.
As well as other things, John, we will have questions.
Yes, okay, we got there. Thanks, Patrick.
Thanks, John. Take care.